It was an astoundingly bad choice. Many people have noticed the peculiar warnings on televisions and computers. Be cautious in opening device, even when unplugged. Why should it matter once the plug is out? The reason is that inside a TV or computer, electric charges can build up on various metal surfaces. When the sweaty, probing finger of an amateur repair person pokes around and happens to place itself between two such surfaces, the electric charges on either side of the finger, waiting on those previously separated metal surfaces, suddenly have an easy path to travel across. The inside of a small laptop will likely give you only a slight shock. But with the powerful batteries White House had hooked up, the inside of the Atlantic cable was now suffering contortions that made it much, much worse. He was pouring in a force field hundreds of times more powerful than Thompson had ever imagined deploying. Some of the force field reached into the central copper wire and pressed against the electric charges there, but much of it easily twisted sideways through the thin, rubbery insulation and ended up using its energy to stir up electric currents in the cold iron outer casing. But remember how the filament in Edison's light bulb would heat up when a lot of electric charge was pushing through it, bumping and skidding against the main body of the metal atoms in the filament? The same thing happened here, under the Atlantic. The central copper wire heated up, and the outer iron casing heated up, and the rubber in between was caught. Each time White House commanded his operators to send yet another telegram, they had to make hundreds of Morse code keystrokes. This meant they were sending hundreds of surges of the invisible force field down the cable. The copper core and the iron sheath quickly got hot as this leaping field made strong currents start up in both of them. Eventually, the rubbery insulation sandwiched in between didn't just get a little bit warmer. It began to melt. At each point where that happened, the charged particles inside the cable no longer had to travel the full 2,000-mile path forward. They could take a shortcut instead, simply traveling the now unshielded single inch sideways from copper to iron. It was literally a shorter circuit, hence the common expression, short circuit. The more White House tried to fix things, the more frantically he revved up his huge batteries, the worse the cable got. After a few days, White House junked his own equipment and, surreptitiously, swearing his operatives to secrecy, went back to Thompson's original, far more gentle transmitters and receivers. But the damage had already been done. Too few of the crackling electrical particles were able to travel undiverted through the long central copper wire. More and more took the nice, convenient short circuit sideways to the iron insulation so nearby. Once there, they would fizzle off into the ocean, heating up the seawater slightly and never getting anywhere near the receiving station, thousands of miles away. By September, only fragments of words were getting across, and by October 20, so much insulation had melted that no signal at all could get through. The cable went dead and was never used again. White House was fired, and Thompson took over. The desperate directors of Fields Company agreed to do whatever Thompson said. Did Thompson have any suggestions for them? He certainly did. A new cable would have to be laid, he explained, with much thicker rubber insulation to try to keep the jumping field from getting across. Once it was connected, only very gentle battery pressure could be applied. Thompson didn't know exactly what was inside the copper core. This was still decades before electrons were discovered. But he did know that whatever carried the electric current in there was almost ineffably light in weight, so much so that the finest jeweler's balance scales couldn't detect it. That slight weight was all that he needed the force field from the battery to move. He was going to give Cyrus Field a whispering genie, not a bellowing one. Cyrus Field still seems to have had some doubts about the theory, but he recognized he had no alternative. If he gave up, the project was over. Nor could he repeat the brute force approach with which White House had failed. He'd have to gamble that Faraday and Thompson were right, and that invisible force fields that could move electric charges really did exist. It would, finally, be a detailed test of Faraday's extraordinary predictions. There were more struggles and more delays, and in 1865, an improved cable snapped, heartbreakingly, two-thirds of the way across the ocean, in water so deep that it was impossible to dredge it up and fix it. But in 1866, yet another cable was laid from the world's largest ship, the Great Eastern, and this one made it. From the time it was pulled up on shore, the new cable clicked along just fine, almost nonstop, for year after profitable year thereafter. Faraday was very old now, and very ill, but it seems that the news was delivered to him, possibly by young Thompson himself.